The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app, we're on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. Where is the summer, I hear you ask? I hope the Ring of Kerry charity cycle participants and volunteers and everywhere else are enjoying themselves today. And just be careful if you're on the roads as well, to note that there are cyclists on the Ring of Kerry today. And send your well wishes to any of those cyclists. Give them a clap, give them a cheer on if they're passing your way as well. Very busy programme. It is the first Saturday of the month, so we have our photography slot in focus with professional photographer Dominic Walsh. Later on, we'll be talking about Talk Shimsa in Fenuig, and they're organising a very special programme of events starting today to mark the 50th anniversary of that building. So we'll have Jimmy Deanahan, we'll have Susan Motherway, and a host of musicians coming in as well. So there's going to be some fantastic music to listen to there. That'll be in the next hour. If you want to get in touch with me during the week, you can email me, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. I mentioned it's the first Saturday of the month, and the man himself is here in studio with me, Dominic Walsh, for a monthly In Focus photography slot. Dominic, you're very welcome. How are you since I last spoke to you?
I'm good, Joe. I'm good. What a month it was. The weather wasn't the best, but you know, I was out there trying to do some pictures and get started out like that. The cyclists today would make great pictures if anybody's out there with their camera. Take their time, get yourself in a good position, stay off the cycle, off the road, and pick a spot so the cyclists can go past you and take a photo from a little bit of a distance, so you won't be causing inconvenience to anybody like that. But you know, there's good light, so just keep it there.
There used to be a program, I don't know, it's probably after your time, before my time, Chips. You know, Poncherello, and yeah. was a man called Chips. It was Punch and Baker. That was Punch and Baker. I used to love that program with the American kind of motorbikes, the police motorbikes they had. But I tell you, it was like Baker pulled up to me the last day a few weeks ago outside the brewery. There was Dominic Walsh. He was after coming through the Malacca Sheen on this. It was like a spaceship, the vehicle he operates on, a motorcycle. And he pulled up outside, and we had a great chat. And the cleanliness of the bike, you must treat that like your baby.
I do. Like, anybody knows me, that I have a bike, I have a boat, I have my camera gear. I always try and keep it as clean as possible. I'm a bit obsessed that way. I like him as clean like that, you know. But listeners, he tried to ignore me, actually, because I pulled up alongside him. He did hear the bike. No, all right. He'd his head down and he'd his bum in the air, walking hard, as he usually was. And I was saying, hey, Joe, do you see me? And he kind of looked over me and said, I better go over and have a chat with him. But we ended up having a great old chat there, you know, on that.
And your friend heard every bit of the chat you told me after, because I was wondering, you had this thing on your helmet, and I was there like, is that a radio or something? Yeah. Well, I can talk away to my mate here on the other bike, and he was overfilling petrol, and there he did, waved over to us because he heard us talking.
That's a good buddy of mine, James Clusky. He's a Dublin man, and they are not in good form this week because they've been knocked out. But James was listening. He could hear both sides of the conversation, your side and my side, because when we're travelling along the road, we can just talk away on that. Yeah. It makes it interesting when you can have a chat as you're going along. And if anybody's into motorbikes and you've got cyclists, South Kerry is an amazing part of the country. You've got a Block Sheen like that, you know, and you go down by Glencar. It's absolutely brilliant. You go off on your bike there for a day and you can have something to eat. We were down in Kinmare last Sunday. A group of bikes arrived into Kinmare, went down there. There must have been 150 motorbikes inside.
Really?
It is actually becoming a very big pastime now, motorcycling around the Kerry, place like that.
Do you know what I love about Kerry? It's so big that there are places we probably haven't been to in the county. That's an amazing thing to say. And like, I'd imagine you probably have been to every place, but like with Radio Kerry now, I travel all over the county. But before, when you'd be playing football, you travel to places you wouldn't usually travel to. But a place I went a few weeks ago, it's near the Black Valley, going through to Sneem, Block Bema. That's absolutely stunning.
Can you go to Glencar that way?
Yeah.
Know it. I've been on it. It's amazing. No houses, no nothing, no electricity poles.
Yes.
And you're going through the mountain, and it's just absolute heaven down.
Yeah, the only thing you meet is sheep, although I did meet a few convertible tourist kind of vintage cars, and I'd say they were finding it tough, because I wouldn't recommend it in the height of the summer now, because it is, they're in many pulling spots, but it's spectacular, absolutely spectacular.
It's absolutely lovely.
It'd be a great place for a photo, and it, I took a few photos while I was there, and you had time to get out, and I took a few of them, so I must show you a few of those actually.
Oh, it's very important. And so when you go and on your bike, you know, like, oh, always lift up the hand and wave to somebody and say hello and say how you are and how's your day, like that, you know. Because when we go into the Black Valley, we meet a lot of tourists. We tend to stop ourselves in places as well, just to look and take in the enormity of the view on that. And you talk to people and they'll always have a question for you. Where would you like to eat, or where would they go for a quick photograph, or is there a place, a stop up here? Well, the main question is always, is there a loo around the place? Nope, there's no toilet around here. Go off down to Sneem or Kinmare or someplace like that.
Very good. Well, as always, Dominic brings along photos that he has taken during the month, and he has a wonderful selection. We should say later on as well that Dominic usually brings us into his archive, and for the week that's in it, we are going to bring you photos of Micheál Mura Hurtig, who sadly passed away last week. May he rest in peace. But Dominic has some wonderful photos there of that legendary broadcaster and commentator. But first, we're going to look at the Count Centre in Tralee. And Dominic, the count is over, the local elections are over, but we look like we could be having a general election sooner rather than later as well. And you have a wonderful selection of photos here. I particularly like the one of the young lad standing up on the counter there, and he's pointing, as he's almost looking like a future Daniel O'Connell there.
I'm telling you, it's real. I was actually taking pictures of the count, and I spotted this young man, his dad with him, on that. That's a young man that was just standing there, and he was put up, and he just looked to see what was happening, and he was obviously pointing. You know, Mike Scanlon, his grandfather was up there, and he was pointing towards his grandfather.
Oh, I guess.
And I spotted him, and I just literally lifted up the camera and just shot it. It's amazing, even when you're sitting, you have your camera close by. If something happens, it's just there and you grab it. You've got to take it when it's there, because if you come back to look for it, it's probably gone.
So are you sorry to cut across you now, but you're in a different mode than, say, like, you know, the way other people would be at the count centre, they might be interested in the counts and the votes and all that, and then there might be other people that are just there to have it all chat, to pass the day. You're probably not in that frame of mind. You're more in the, I have to take a photo, I have to get a good photo, I have to watch for opportunity.
I'm an opportunist, and that's what I do when I go to an event like that. And I tend to sit with a reporter. If I'm there with a reporter, it was the Irish Examiner reporter, so we sit together and we can talk, and I'm just there. And when you're in the press area of the count, that's for the press only, and it tends to be the press that are there, Radio or Kerry there. They've got their group there.
That's up on the balcony there.
Four or five people sitting there on that, and we're sitting there. And if anybody's watching us from a distance, they're looking at the press and the media and say, they never talk. They're sitting down. They're either writing or they're typing. They're doing something.
But you're working.
We're working hard on. You've got to go out. You're trying to capture so much, and you're trying to portray an event that's after happening or is about to happen like that. And you get the highs, you get the lows, you get the people who got their seats, and you get the people that haven't got their seats. And as a rule, you always go to the person that has lost their seat first. You get their pictures and what you have to do with them. And then, because if you're celebrating, you tend to stay that little bit longer like that, you know, so we get it. And also, if you look at the photographs then as well, you try and capture something in the photograph where it tells a story. And the main story of that is, you can see one of the pictures here. I've borrowed a stepladder from Kerry Kennelly, a colleague of mine, a photographer, and I'm up on top of the top step of this, just behind people, looking down on top of them, over their shoulders. They're called talliers. Mm. So the talliers, as we spoke, are very important. The talliers actually would know the outcome of the election before anybody else would.
Yeah. And they're looking at the counters.
They're
then,
looking
yeah,
at the count, and they can see the ballot papers going down, and I've taken a shot. Talliers, they're sorting out the ballot papers, the staff are sorting them out, and you can see the tables and the count tables behind them on that. And you can see an interesting photograph as well, where they've actually got a device to break locks, because when the locks leave, or when the boxes leave the count centres where you cast your ballot, they lock them. And they send the keys off with somebody else. But the keys don't always make it back.
So it's an actual lock. It's not like a cable tie. It's a physical lock.
No, it's an actual lock.
And they break the physical lock.
If they have the key if the keys come with it, yes, but sometimes they don't get the keys on that. So what they got, they got this device that breaks the lock and they get in. That's John Breen there, you know, and another gentleman trying to get in on that. And one of the photographs then...
The one with the thimble, is it? Are you going to come to that? Because I think that's an amazing photo. The hand. You had like the sewing thimble that you'd put on your index finger. And I'd imagine because they're siphoning through so many papers, you could get an old paper cut, which could be very nice if you got it started
to
the count.
Not to get it like that. No, that's an unusual shot. We, as members of the press, are not allowed to show ballot papers. Mm. And we can't show pictures or we can't show numbers or anything like that on it. You can do it probably from a distance. So the way I've shot this is there's a ballot paper pile.
Yeah.
And they're taking them off that pile and they're putting them down to their right and they're checking all the number ones and that. So I've taken the shot along and I've cut out the names and I've cut out actually the photographs on it.
Well, let's look at your other photos that you've brought in. And the next photo we're going to go to is the Kingdom County Fair, which took place on Saturday 11th, Sunday 12th of May at Ballymacthomas Tralee. It was a fun-filled weekend for all the family as thousands of people arrived for the show. Seven-year-old Noel Connell from Ballyhaig at the cattle show event, and what a wonderful shot this is of him looking through the fence there, and he has his uniform on all in white with a splendid looking animal, and he looks as proud as punch there, and he's a good poser. He's giving you a good shot there for yourself.
He is actually, like, just for listeners, if you had to go any place and to have opportunities to take pictures in anything you do, a place like the Kingdom County Fair, an agricultural show, is the place to go. It's all there for you. And this young man, I spotted him. I was on the other side of the fence. Now, I did cheat a little bit in this, Joe. I did. Oh. I called his attention and I said, just look at me, is what I said to him. So that's why he's looking into the
camera.
Why
did you do that? Because there's so many things between you and him. Is it so that he was looking at you? Like, there's a gate, there's a rope, there's wire, there's...
There is. Now, I did take the candid shots beforehand of him just... looking around and anything like
that. Is that what you call candid when they're just kind of in motion?
In motion, and it's non-scripted.
Yeah.
It's non-planned.
Candid camera, yeah.
It's like a candid, you know, a candid shot you would take on that. So I took those, but they just didn't work. So I called him and he looked at me on that. But when I was talking to the young man, the calf then started looking at me. And if you look at the picture, you can see the calf's eye looking right at me
like that.
And these young people, they're going into the ring to show off their animals like that, and he's all in white. The animals are spotlessly clean on that, and the way they do it, it's so orchestrated and so professional. It's absolutely brilliant to see it on that. As a picture works, I've shot it through a fence. There's a bar going over his head. There's a rope there. There's wires there. There's, you know, as a picture goes, it's probably not the ideal angle to get. Yeah. It just works.
It does work, yeah. The calf is like, get my good side here. Here you go, which is a great shot. Then we have a sporting photo, and this is the Joe McDonagh Cup, round three hurling clash played at Ossinsleck GA Park, Tralee. Michael Lane, and Padraig Delaney Leash in action during the game. And again, this is a spectacular mid-air shot, the two of them going for the slitter, and a wonderful catch, and you can see almost every sinew in his arm there as well as he tries to stretch and grab the slitter, which he does with great aplomb.
Actually, you kind of spotted what I intended to show in the picture, that you can see the muscles clenching, you can see the body, the expressions in the face, you can see his hand up, it's almost like an eagle's claw that has grabbed the slitter on that. And evidently, if you look at the slitter, it's yellow. They're using yellow slitters a lot more, and it makes my job so easy.
Yeah.
Oh,
imagine,
it's unbelievable to see yellow slitter. You can spot it very quickly on that, because as anybody would know, hurling is my... I love photographing hurling. These guys are on their way down after jumping about 5 feet in the air. Like, I mean, they're like, you know, kangaroos when they can just jump up, and they're going, and they're actually travelling through the air at high speed. They're going up and they're working out. But the thing about it is, you can see the guy that has grabbed, or Kerry player has grabbed the ball, he knows what he's doing with it, even in the air. He's looking around, he's watching. The hand just holds the ball and he's going into his next move. You can see the hurley getting ready as he's coming down and he's ready to pop it off and get up the field.
And you've written in your notes here, you know, the way you usually you describe the ISO, the lens and all that, you have focus auto. Is that because they're moving through the air so quick that you kind of have to leave it, pick it up itself, or what does that mean? Why is it on auto focus?
I would use a lot of focus. Normally I tend to use auto focus lock, where I would auto focus and then I would press another button and lock that focus and hold it. For this, there's so much to do.
Yeah.
And you have a lot to do when you're taking these pictures. This picture was taken at 3,200 of a second, like very, very fast. F7.1 was that. And the reason that I had it on auto is I have so much to worry about that taking the focus out of it, and it works. And to be honest, like that, I can have so many different types of photos. I can have 3D focusing, I can have auto focusing, I can have wrap focusing, wrap around where it takes in areas, different things like that. I can set it to the eyes, but I tend to use a basic, whereas a 3-point focus is what I tend to use a lot myself when I'm doing it.
Yeah, I think Mikey would like a photo of that. Michael would like a photo of that. It's absolutely spectacular, and the expression on his face as well. That's one of your best ones, Dominic, and that's saying something for the great photos you bring in. It's a great sporting one. We have lots more photos to get to, including all of your photos that you sent to us. Our theme for this month was lasting impressions, something that made a lasting impression on you, something that makes a lasting impression on you, someone, some place, something, and you are to email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. We're going to be looking at your photos after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
You're listening to In Focus, our photography slot with professional photographer Dominic Walsh. And it's time now to look at your photos that you sent in to us at home. And we welcome all and everyone to send in the photos to us and give us a bit of a story as well. And we give you a theme to focus the mind. And this month, it was lasting impressions. And first one in is Moss Joe Brown, who's usually first past the post. He always sends one in fairly early. It's as a bit of sunshine is a rarity at times in Ireland. These three gents were making a day to remember outside Eddie Walsh's bar in Knocknagoshal. Yours, Moss Joe Brown. And there it is with Eddie Walsh outside the bar and three men take it easy in a rare spell of sunshine, Dominic.
Isn't it a great picture, Knocknagoshal? I pass that place regularly. I knew Eamon Walsh that had the pub at one stage there on that. It's just, Moss is there. He travels around, he takes these pictures. They're unusual. It's simple and it looks well. And you have three people sitting there that you might, as I say, you might pass and never take a picture. But when you capture it, it just works.
Yeah, and I think I'm trying to read the plaque there. It says Ned Walsh, I think, is on it, and then Eddie Walsh is written on it as well. There's obviously a plaque in memory of someone there, which is nice as well. Hi Joe, hard for me to choose pictures that left a lasting impression, but here goes. The aerial picture was out of this world for me. I was picked up by a small plane from Bale Beach and got the chance to see my local area from a different angle. And there's picture was of Carrigafoyle Castle, Ballylongford. The second picture was the one that gave me my love of taking home what I see in the way of photography. Picture taken on Bale Strand. The third picture is of my two dogs waiting for me to take them for a walk. Monty and Bailey. Both dogs are past now and died within a month of each other. And I miss them very much. This picture always brings a smile to my face, my hand. Well, I think that perfectly encapsulates lasting impression, and that they died within a month of each other must have been a bit of brokenheartedness, which is it's sad, but it just shows how much they loved each other and you loved them as well in the photos. Dominic, a nice selection here.
Lovely selection, and I commiserate the poor dogs because I lost a dog as well this year, and they're part of the family when they go. Like, it's quite upsetting there on that. The picture I kind of like is the picture of the lady walking on the beach. Just to tell our listeners, she's taken from a distance and she's taken the sunset, a little bit of a mountain there, that's probably the Shannon I'd say, and going along, and you've got the water, the reflection of the sun coming along, setting, and this person's walking. Absolutely lovely picture. It works well. The aerial shot, I'm envious. It's a pity somebody wouldn't take me up in a plane more often to take shots like that,
because that's the old way of doing it. That's now there's all drones
now,
and
it's
all
a drone. Yeah. If I go out now, it's the drone. You go up and do it like that, but that's absolutely lovely. And the thing about the plane, you can go up higher with a plane than you can with a drone. The drone, you're kind of curtailed to 400 feet unless you get special permission to go higher on that. But it's a very, very unusual picture, and it just shows that where Carrigafoyle Castle is, and the water when it goes out, that you've got the water, the stream, rivers going around, and you've got the landscape there. It's just a good picture. The composition is very good.
Excellent. Good morning, Joe and Dominic. With only 4 minutes to closing time, 11:56, and that's with reference to that it is Wednesday midday before the first Saturday month that you have to get your photos in. I must send you a picture of my everlasting impression. And when I saw who this came from, I said, well, this definitely must be the husband now, or else there'll be trouble in the camp if a photo of the husband isn't sent. And it is John My Onam Cara, Agnes O'Sullivan, and it's a picture of her husband John, a wonderful picture, and he's holding, I think it's an Easter bunny maybe. And the next photo then that Agnes sends in, Joe and Dominic, evening time and the sun setting over Dingle Bay, and she has that wonderful view of Dingle Bay there, Dominic.
Dingle is lovely. The Dingle Bay is lovely. And what I might do is, on that, just be very aware that you don't underexpose a lot. Like, even though the sky is there, the land is a little bit underexposed. But it's a very
good picture.
What do you
mean by underexposed?
Underexposed means that it's a little bit darker. Like, you expose for a setting, you might take, let's say, 1.25 at 5.6. And that gives you an average light reading. So you might take, so maybe the sky might be good in colour and the land then is a little bit darker because it's a brighter area on that. So what you should do is probably just brighten it up a little bit, just play around a little bit and try and get it where the land is a little bit brighter. It works. But on some occasions, rules are made to be broken. This is probably what she wanted, was a dark land and to have the sun and the shadows coming in, because it does enhance the sky a little bit more when you darken down the land a little bit. But as a picture, it's quite working on that.
Yeah, excellent. Next collection of photos are wonderful. Being transported to the Skellig's Lighthouse for duty, a trip I would have carried out over 500 times. And for context, this is sent in from Richard Forn from Valinche Island, and Richard would have worked with the Irish Lights, so would have worked on lighthouses. So that's a spectacular photo. Looking west from the lighthouse at sunset in a never-changing light, one could not but wonder at the beauty of the world and life. And the third photo, being greeted in the springtime by the piercing eye of the puffin, wondering why we are intruding on his kingdom. Richard Forn. That photo of the helicopter is such a unique one. Like, I've often seen from Fault Ireland, you know, the aerial shot of the Skelligs, and remember the army did it from the army helicopter a few years ago as well. There were some wonderful photos, but this is another perspective. This, we can actually see the helmet of the pilot and the inside of the helicopter with the Skelligs in the background.
But we're always telling people, like, your pictures should tell a story on that, and this picture, you just look at it, you don't need any caption, you don't need anything on it, it just tells the story. Somebody in a helicopter going over to the Skelligs like that, you can see the pilot in front on that, and the composition of it is very good. You can see the wiper blade actually doesn't even interfere with the rock on that. So what it is, I presume this person has just sat in the helicopter, camera or phone, held it up and took a picture.
A camera, I would say.
It's probably a camera that's used like that. But it's just a unique perspective. And the thing about it is, it's just very different. And you're giving it a complete new life by taking it in the helicopter. He could have easily put it up to the glass and taken a picture from a distance and up, and you just had the rock. But just this tells the story. And it really lasts in the mind.
But come here to meet the puffin as well. The detail on that is spectacular, isn't it?
They're a magnificent bird. If you can get out to them,
but to get that close and to get that detail.
Well, actually, when they get on the Skellig, you'd be surprised how close you can get to them.
Yeah.
They're not bothered with people really, because they feel so safe there and that. Yeah. Whereas if you go, and I've photographed them on the sea in the water, and I try to get close and they just take off. So they're kind of, and also if they're nesting, they're very protective of the nest and they tend to stay around the nest anyway like that. But the colours that they have, normally you'd see them with fish in the beak like that. It's a lovely, good picture to get as well. It's absolutely lovely set of picture. And the sunset, that sun there and the clouds around it, the composition is absolutely perfect.
Excellent. Well done, Richard Foran. We have loads more of your photos to get to, and we have to say the quality this month is absolutely outstanding. We'll get to them after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
This is the Saturday Supplement. It's the first Saturday of the month, and Dominic Walsh is with us for our monthly In Focus photography slot. We're looking at your photos, and the theme was lasting impressions. And Charles Fitzell gets in touch. Hi, Joe. Here's a photo of my faithful friend, Klopp, wearing a cap, enjoying the sunshine. I wasn't sure if I would send it in or not, but said I would, as it looks as if he hasn't a care in the world. I always enjoy listening to yourself and Dominic. A great double act, Charles Fitzell. Charles, thanks a million for that, Charles Fitzell. And he always signs off his messages with YNWA, you'll never walk alone, a real Liverpool fan. And I have to admit, Dominic, when I heard Klopp, I thought it was going to be a photo of Jurgen Klopp, the former manager of Liverpool. But it's a real cutesy photo here of a beautiful little kind of a hairy kind of a terrier with the cap draped around it, and he is laughing mad. He's enjoying life.
Do you know, again, with the animals, they're just there looking up, and like to put a hat, a cap, a capine on this little dog, like, is absolutely amazing. And the dog's looking up, he's inside in a field, and you can see the fence behind, you can see the lovely blue sky with the clouds flying past him right there. It's just a day where you could just sit out and relax and enjoy yourself, because there are some days there when it's like that, you just relax on that, and the dog's just looking, and it's almost look as if he's got a smile on his face.
Hi, Joe and Dominic. The photos that make a lasting impression on me are of the recent Aurora Borealis. I think that's how you pronounce it. The first photos taken at home that night, and then one of with the wishing tree on the island road Tarbert, which luckily fell on the night, darkness into light. So the road was decorated with candles as well. And Dominic, you took photos that night as well. These are wonderful photos, aren't they?
They're actually kind of better than mine, really. If you look at them like that, they're quite good. I like the angles. I love the composition. It's very good. And I really, really like that tree, like that wishing tree going along there on that. And it's lovely to see the little buntings going along, and you can really see the colours behind it like that. See, the thing is, when you go out and you take a picture, it's always good. Take a picture, but just stand back, look at your picture, think of what you've got, and maybe go to another angle or try it a different way or just slightly change it, and then you can come up with a completely different picture of the same thing. So they're lovely. And the other one there on that, it's just like, it's like a beam of light coming down to the land. It's absolutely great. And in this picture, you can see the land is totally underexposed, and it adds to the picture. You know?
Excellent. Hi, Joe and Dominic. I attached two images on lasting impressions theme. First is of Menard Castle near Onascall, which continues to stand defiantly tall and dominant against the western sky after being severely damaged by Cromwellian forces almost 400 years ago. Menard Castle was one of the last sights Tom Crean would have seen as he sailed off to join the Navy, having signed up at Menard Coast Guard Station. Tom, too, would make his own lasting impression in due course. Second image of Valentia Lighthouse, which dates from the 19th century and continues to play an important role in maritime safety. Both these structures have seen a lot of change over the years, and I suppose one can safely say that they've both left a lasting impression and would continue to do so for many more years to come. Best regards, Michael Kennedy in Inch. And the Cromwellian Fort is what surrounded the lighthouse in Valentia as well, so there's another Cromwell theme there as well. But how wonderfully was that put, Dominic, about the lasting impressions? Very well said.
See, a little bit of a story, it just adds so much to a picture. Now, it is a very good picture, and for our listeners, what Michael has done, instead of taking the picture from the road, he's actually gone up over and he's gone down onto the beach, and there's very big boulders down that beach.
With
it's a
moss
lovely
stuck to
moss
them, yeah.
There's green, you know, and he's got
algae, I suppose, more than moss, is it?
Algae or algae, we'll have to back to the ladybird again anyway. But the thing about it is that when you take the time to go down here and take this picture from the angle that he's taken, the lower angle of it, it's going along, the bowlers are very big, and it goes on. If these thirds rule here, you've got the sky, you've got the Menard Castle, and you've got the foreground on it, which is the rocks. It's very good as a rule goes on that. I think it's a great picture. And as for the lighthouse down in Valentia, that's a beautiful place down there, and it's a great place to get down and get pictures, and it's a very safe place to go down. You can drive down the road there, and you actually stand there, and you can
they
take
do
pictures.
Tours as well
they
down
do there, tours yeah. down there actually.
There's and a coffee a shop in there
coffee
yeah.
shop in there. And look, that's when you're going around, we've so much to offer around here, whether it be Menard Castle or whether it's down in Valentia and going to the lighthouse like that. They're actually very amenable now for people to go, and people should go and view these places, because they're places some people have never seen the inside of, or how they actually work. So it's actually lovely. You've got lovely water. You've got the lighthouse. And it's taken for kind of an unusual angle as well, you know, on that. It's taken, I'm trying to think now, would that be taken on the eastern side of
it? So it's more the car park side of it, yeah. So it'd be the Glenneam House side.
Yes, yeah, on that chain.
So, it's not from the coast side, in other words.
It's
so
not
it's,
on the coast.
It's inside, yeah.
Yes.
So then you'd have Glanleam, you're looking across a Begnish, over the water, then comes across, like, I always say that mountain looks like a crocodile, if you look at it from a certain angle, and that's the head of the crocodile there. And then, like, to your left, you can't see it in the photo, but you're looking across at the Blaskets.
And it's normally at the left now, and that's where I would normally photograph the lighthouse from.
Yeah.
And this person has just taken from another angle.
You can see more of the dwelling house and the buildings because of it, yeah.
Yes, you can. Whereas the other side, you can't. You're just making out the lighthouse head itself like that. Great pitch. And just about the time and effort into that, it's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, it's really a place that's photographed quite a lot. And it's used a lot in tourism brochures and things like that as well. And I know Valencia, the Island Development Company, actually used the lighthouse as a kind of a logo as well, because it's such a major part. We did the documentary on the lighthouses of Kerry. So they're in the most amazing places, aren't they? Because they had to be. They had to be in these remote places, but they're just spectacular.
And what's happened now, a lot of lighthouses are opening up where people can actually stay in them. Which is fantastic again. You can go and take your time and stay in a place. Now, obviously, Valencia mightn't have that facility there, but a lot of lighthouses around the country, you can go and do your bed and breakfast or whatever and stay there, and it's absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant. So that's our photos from our listeners. Dominic, what have you gone for humour photo of the month? Because we had one this month.
We did. The humour photo has to go to Charles Fitzell and the dog with the hat, with the smile and looking
in.
Clop, the hat on that. And as I say to listeners, thanks very much for sending in the stuff. We look at them the day before. We go through them. We argue about them. We put them in position and we have our chit-chats like that. So we do look at every picture coming in and we spend a bit of time actually going through them. And the quality this month was exceptional. It was absolutely very good.
Yeah, well, Charles, you're our humour photo of the month. And our photo of the month is
Skellig Michael. And that was taken by Richard Fawn from the helicopter.
The helicopter one, yeah, that was a spectacular shot, wasn't it?
It was absolutely brilliant. It just left a lasting impression in my mind on that, and I think that's what works in a photograph.
And I know he said he travelled it hundreds of times, but I can imagine the first time you did it, that would leave a lasting impression, the image of that from the air to look at the rock.
But see, he's in a very unique position, and he had a unique job on that. Like, sometimes when I go to places to photograph them, each time I go, it's completely different and it's unique. So each time he approached the rock, I'm sure it was quite different.
Brilliant. Well, our theme for next month, Dominic?
We're going to go keep it simple. On that, we're going to go just, you know, July in pictures.
July in pictures.
Go out and photograph July.
And hopefully we have a good sunny July now, because June didn't play ball.
No, it didn't play ball. That's because the weather was coming from the north as far as saying it was the cold weather was coming down like that. But hopefully, fingers crossed, legs crossed and cross everything else like that, you know. We're hoping that it will get a bit better.
Because how we came up with this was July Monday, that's famous song, July Please. That's great, kind of sums up the summer. So we're hoping for a bit of that. So your July photos for us, please email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. There's a lot of events that go on in July as well around the county as well, so maybe that's what sums up July for you. It could be the All 99, we could get a nice few shots of them, or maybe it's going to the Cushfarraga, going to the sea and Ixnaw swimming or whatever it is. Send them to us, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. We're going to take a break, and after that we're going into Dominic Walsh's archive.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Dominic Walsh is still with us for our monthly In Focus photography slot, and we learned of the sad passing last week of broadcaster and commentator and proud Kerry man, legendary figure in this county and in this country and around the GA world, especially Micheál Murathaigh. And you have brought us in a collage of photos, Dominic. You would have photographed him a lot.
I would have photographed him a lot over the last 30 years I'm in photography, and I would have met him a lot. And the first time I met him, I introduced myself, and every time after that, he knew me by name.
Go away. That's a great sign, because
it is.
Like, to be fair, the amount of people he'd meet.
Yes,
now,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He didn't go, "How's that man?"
No, he'd say, "How are you doing, Dominic?"
Go away, that. In that nice West Kerry accent.
Very soft voice. Yeah. And every time he met me, even though I was there to photograph him, he always ended up talking about me. What are you doing and how are things now and how are you getting on and what you're doing? So he was just so polite. Like, I think he was a man really that didn't realise he was so famous. Like, as he said to me one time, he says, people like me, Dominic, you know, because I introduced him as a famous person to people. He said, no, people just like me for who I am. I'm just the guy that lives down in Kerry, he says, and that's who I am. And that's the way he was. He was never kind of to put himself out there. It was himself, the man that people just admired. He was great.
Yeah, I met him twice. Once at the Mikko unveiling statue. I did a little video documentary on that. And it's just the way he's able to, like, you ask him a question and it's like it's all pre-written out and wonderfully put together and articulated. He had an amazing way of speaking. Yeah, yeah, brilliant. And another time was here in studio again. And same, very unassuming. And kind of gives the control over to you, and then he'll answer away, no problem. Absolutely brilliant. Met his daughter as well, and she would help him out a lot when he was doing his commentary as well. Lovely family. So our thoughts and prayers are with them, we should say, before we look at their photos. So the first photo we are looking at is of him with the microphone, and that's a great place to start. And he's sitting down, and he is laughing. It's like an interview setting to me on a stage or something.
It was, yes. Like, the thing about me Hall, he never had a loud laugh. He'd kind of a chuckle. He had that lovely kind of silent laugh that you'd have to get involved with like that. This was in Dublin in 2018, where they had a night to honour him. There were 630 guests there from Mia Hall, like that. That was in the Clayton Hotel in Dublin, and a special guest was President Michael Higgins was on there as well, like that, and he was talking on stage, and Mia Hall was giving stories. And you know something? He was giving stories, and just people didn't want him to get off the stage, because every story was better than the next story. And then he'd on about something about he'd arrive at a place and he'd meet Joe McGill, but he'd talk to Joe McGill about his grandfather that he knew at an event, and he was probably into dogs or something like that. He was absolutely brilliant to go with. And the night we were there, he was honoured. He was just in awe at what people like taught him like that. He was absolutely brilliant man to interview.
And then we have a wonderful photo of him sitting on a rock. And I presume this is in West Kerry, is it? This is not in Meath now. This is down in the home place, is it?
This is West Kerry. This was on his 90th birthday. On the day of his 90th birthday, I got a call to go out and photograph him. So I made contact with Micheál Hall. He's 90. And I said, look, can I go out and take your picture? And we're going to take some pictures. And he says to me, my dear man, he says, I go for my walk during the day in the beach. You're more than welcome to come for a walk with me if you want. I said, no problem. I'm in my 50s. He's in his 90s, just turned 90. I said, I have no problem going for a walk. So off I went down to the beach, met him, met the family. And he says, I'll go for my walk now. I said, off you go, bye. There's no problem. I'll be with you. When we all walked, he, like, if I walk, I take a step of about 2.5 feet. We all take strides.
Glides,
so he could go to 3 feet on his. So every time he was walking, I was walking with him. Before I knew it, he was gone, and I was trying to run up to him and say, "Right, yeah, okay, Micheál, we'll hear like that." Okay, so he said, "But I'll get the walk to him." I said, "Yeah, I'll get the walk to him." Actually, he was walking halfway through, and I said, "Micheál, you do me a favor. I will, Dominic. What do you want? Will you sit down so I can take your picture?" I said, "I can't be running after you." And he was 90, and it just, and this picture I took on the rock. And I got a big surprise when I attended the funeral the last day when I arrived, and that they actually had this picture in the front of his mass booklet.
Oh, really?
So it was a picture that I took, and I was quite honoured that out of all the pictures and all the photographers in the country, that they used a picture from me in the front of his mass booklet. I presume it was the fact this is his beach, his home is very close to it, and I'd say it was very personal to him.
Yeah, wonderful. And then there's like a portrait photo of him as well. That's kind of more a professional setup, is it?
This is a professional. This was taken in the Skellig Hotel back in Dingle many years ago, and this is probably my favourite picture that I've ever
had.
Because the reason it was taken is just, it's him. We had a great chat, we had a giggle, we had a talk, and he spent more time talking about me. And again, I had to say, look, can I just get a quick picture? He says, you can. And there was a videographer, a film crew there on the day as well, and they were kind of saying, Dominic knows Micheál and he's having all his chats, we want to get ours as well. Ogie Moran was there the same day on that. You know, it was to do with the MTU when they were getting ready to build a sports academy, so they were doing a promotion for that. And I just said to Micheál, just look into my camera on the tripod, and took my couple of pictures. And I looked at a picture and he says, are you okay? I said, I don't need anything else, Micheál, I have the picture. And I went up and showed him the picture, and he says to me, what do you think of that now, Dominic? I says, I think it's a nice picture. He says, fair play to you, he said.
Brilliant. And it shows this one as well. It shows the fun aspect of Micheál as well, like you said. I heard Billy Keane describe him during the week as a bit of a rogue. And in Kerry, that's a huge compliment, he was saying, which is so true. And you can see that roguish charm there in the Rande. And I presume it's the green and gold Rande, is it?
Green and gold, he was a member of
that. Yeah, because he has the face paint on his face and he's holding the straw hat and he looks like he's enjoying life.
He's enjoying it. That was taken when he was 87 or 88 years old, and he used to participate in the green and gold, ran around dingling like that, you know. And Micheál liked this, and I suppose the reason that he liked it is if when Micheál arrived, everybody was around him, everybody wanted a picture, and he was so happy and he was great and he was getting on with people and he was talking with people like that, you know. And he has his straw hat there, but as soon as that straw hat went on, he just faded away into everything. He was with all the people there and he was putting on his straw hat and he could watch what's happening around like that, you know, and you'd get the voice and people would know it was him. They'd go up chatting to him and he'd have a chat, and he just liked it. And the thing about it is he'd probably be the last person to put on the straw hat, you know, on that, because he'd be talking to people so much on that, and he would just go around and listen and watch and entertain people like that. So it was great to get those pictures.
And finally, we're almost out of time. Last Saturday was his funeral mass, was it?
Last Saturday was his funeral mass.
And there you see, you've captured that as well. I'd imagine, you know, it was a sad occasion, but a kind of a celebration of a wonderful life as well.
It was a great celebration of his life, Joe. And I think his son alluded on the day that in their house, like sometimes you might go into a house and you're not allowed to jump on the beds. In their house, they were jumping on the beds, and Micheál would go in and jump on the bed. He was that type of gentleman, like, so he was a real father figure on that. And this is a picture that I've taken St. Mary's Church. And what I did was I went up onto the balcony. Now, I took an awful, awful lot of pictures on the day. And thank you to the family and thank you to the people there for giving the media such, you know, courtesy on the day. And I hope we weren't too intrusive on the day, but that, like, these pictures had to be captured in a way because he was so famous. But I took the picture. The coffin is just coming down from the altar. You've got the four priests leading the procession down, and you've got the coffin coming, and it's draped in the Kerry flag, and you've people around, you've people inside. And do something, it's, I don't normally agree with mobile phones at funerals and things like that, but people are also capturing the memory there themselves as well to take it.
Well, a bit of Oscailge Niveg Lehade Arish Aun, and what a wonderful speaker he was of his native tongue as well, and may he rest in peace. Wonderful selection of photos. Dominic, we're out of time. Thanks a million for coming in. We look forward to you coming in next month. The theme is July in Pictures, or July in Photos. Email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Dominic, thanks a million.
Thank you very much, Joe, for having me. And cyclists and road users today, take care on the road.
Brilliant. Well, now, after the break and news at 10, we'll be talking about Tak Siamsa, which are having a programme of events this weekend to mark 50 years.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement. I'm Joe McGill. I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. Now, I mentioned this before the news at 10, but there's a very special programme of events to mark the 50th anniversary of the opening of Tak Siamsa on July 7th, 1974 in Fanug. It's taking place this weekend, starting this evening. The programme will include an address by the man who conceived and founded it, Father Pat Ahern, as well as the unveiling of a plaque to recognise the vision of Father Pat, Liam Tarrant, Martin Whelan, and Seamus Wilmot, who was the chairperson of the board at the time. And I understand his family are probably listening in, and hopefully they'll be around. And also Kieran O'Donnell, TD and Minister of State for the Office of Public Works, will be there. Now, the origins of Siamsa Tíre date back to 1957, when a young curate, Father Pat Ahern, was sent to Kerry to establish a new choir in St. John's Church in Tralee. The success of the choir and the talents of some of the members inspired Pat Ahern to stage a passion play entitled Golgotha in 1963. This performance met with such acclaim that a celebratory night was organised to acknowledge the performers and our organisers. The night concluded with a special presentation of song, dance and music by some of those involved. This too was so warmly received that Father Pat Ahern and a number of others decided to continue to explore further possibilities for the informal group. They decided to call themselves Siamsóirí na Riachta. A core impetus for the group was the preservation of some of the traditions in music, song and dance in North Kerry that were endangered danger of disappearing. Chief among these was the Munich style of dancing as taught by the travelling dance master Jerry Molyneux, or Jerry Munich as he was known. Many of the pieces included in the initial presentations focused on Oran Seher, or work song, which accompanied many of the traditional occupations and tasks in rural Ireland. During these early years, Shimshori Narita performed in a variety of venues in Ireland, including the Abbey Theatre and abroad, and were also invited to perform on a number of radio, television and productions. In 1968, Michael May, Bord Fáilte representative in Tralee, suggested that the group stage a season of productions during the summer. This was to be Shimsa Tira's first summer season. Now, Pat Ahern prepared a plan to foster the development of Irish folk culture in 1972, and in the ensuing years, he proceeded to implement it with the formation of Shimsa Tira Cho in 1974. Pat Ahern was appointed artistic director, a position he held until his retirement in 1998. Now, a vital element of Pat Ahern's plan was the fostering of traditional Irish folk culture in a series of Tithe Shimsa, or folk academies, located in strategic, tradition-rich parts of rural Ireland. The first of these was built in Fenuig in North Kerry in 1974, and the second the following year in Corrig in Corchaglina Gaeltacht. Here, training in music, dance, song and movement were delivered to selected students over a period of 3 years free of charge. Those students who show significant promise then graduate to an advanced class in Shimsa Tira in Tralee. The other key individual in the development of Shimsa Tira was Martin Whelan. Now, Martin initially became involved in a voluntary capacity when Tok Shimsa in Fenuig was being built. His energy and commitment to this development led him to take a more full-time role in the organisation. And in 1974, he was appointed as general manager of Shimsa Tira, a position he retained until his untimely death in 2002. At the time of his passing, Martin Whelan had become one of the best-known and best-loved arts administrators in the country. Now, last year, I interviewed Father Pat Ahern following the publication of his wonderful book, Forging the Dance, which is his story and also is the story of Shimsa Tira. And I'm just going to play you a little excerpt now. And this is where he is talking about his good friend Liam Tarrant and how they chose the site in Fenuig for Tok Shimsa.
Liam Tarrant was one of the people that was my great support right through, and he found that he was my gopher, you know, and he found the sites both in Fenuig and in Corrig, and he did the deals for me, and we had no committee that time, we were just the two of us.
You needed doers.
Needed doers, yeah. And his books, I could travel many a road. We travel lots of the roads in North Kerry, for instance, seeing where would we put out our tent. And we came up with Fenuig as being bang in the middle of North Kerry, if you like, but not too big, not a big town. Needed the rural feeling to it, you see, and that was Fenuig. Great, great people there.
Yeah, and that is how they found the location. Wonderful people and a good place to start it. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined now in studio by Susan Motherway and also by Jimmy Deanahan, who are organising this wonderful event. Jimmy needs no introduction, former minister and one of the organisers here. Jimmy, I suppose no surprise that they chose a great location there in Fenuig to, you know, to encompass Irish culture and the arts and everything else associated with it. Some talented people there.
Yeah, certainly, and it's right smack in the middle of North Kerry, and that's why it was chosen by Liam Tarrant at that particular time. And as Father Pat said, he sent out Liam Tarrant to look around North Kerry for an ideal location, and he decided on Fenuig because of its location in the centre of North Kerry, and also because of its very strong tradition in music, song and dance and other aspects of rural living. It's a very rural, rustic community. And also he found a very willing owner of property there that was, again, very reasonable as regards selling it to Shimsa at that particular time, Gerald McCarthy. And Gerald passed away in 2002, unfortunately, at a very young age. But I would say because of his generosity, really, It made it easier for Shimsett to locate in Finug at that particular time. But the whole community bought into it. They helped in the building of it, in the drainage of the plot. And there's two very good films, videos on it. One by Desmond Dermot McCarthy of Ryark, and the other one by John Lynch and Paul Kennelly of Finug. They both did videos on it, and now they survive. They showed the turning of the sod and then the opening in 74. And Tom O'Donnell, who was minister at that particular time, was a huge supporter of Shimsa. And Tom both turned the sod, and he was then minister again when it was opened, and he opened the latch on the Tok Shimsa. So there was that huge connection. And they were very fortunate as well. Father Ahern, he, I suppose, picked a very strong board at that particular time under Seamus Wilmot, who was a huge figure that time in Irish education, but also in the arts. And he was an author of books, and also he was the author of a number of plays in the Irish language. He set up the Tyrocht up in Galway City, for example. He was very much involved in it. So what Shimsa did really at that particular time, they took that tradition that was really ripe in North Kerry, the ways of life of its people, from their songs, their music, their dances, their manners, customs and folklores, as Pat Herdon refers to in his book, and they translated that transition, that whole tradition, and then they transmitted it on stage then through mime, dance, song and music. And they did a training in Finug in order to do that on stage. And Susan Motherway, who I must say drew up this program, and it's an excellent program, Susan was one of the recipients and the trainees in Tok Shimsa, and she's very familiar obviously with what happened there, but also the people that went there as well. And many of these people now have become global figures in traditional arts and in other arts forms.
Yeah, and Susan, your best place to answer that question, what did the training do for you? How vital was it for your own journey?
Oh, absolutely, really important. I think there's probably, I suppose we can all engage with the traditional arts and learn how to play, but when you join Shimsa, you learn really to become a performer. And I suppose that's the big difference. You get to go on the stages, you get to travel and, you know, meet international artists. And I suppose Father Pat gave me great opportunities to work with, I suppose, the leading traditional artists at the time, Micheál O'Sullivan and Bill Whelan. I got to work with both of them, play with RTE orchestras at the age of 16. You know, I played in the National Concert Hall. Who else would have been given that opportunity, you know, especially when you were just, you know, down in Tralee, which isn't really, you know, a majorly traditional music hub, you know. So I suppose he opened doors and opportunities, and he's given these performers a great confidence to move forward. And some people have really risen, you know. I suppose we've a number of PhDs and academics and things coming out of it. We have an opera singer in Paula Murray. We have people on screen with the drummies, you know. So it's just amazing the opportunities that he's given everybody.
Yeah, and Jimmy, I suppose we'll talk about the legacy later on, but I suppose the importance of it set it up in 1974 to preserve our culture. You were Minister for the Arts and Heritage of Gaeltacht. You were, you know, heavily involved in a lot of that preservation as well over the last few years. But at that time, it was vital as well because, you know, some of it wasn't being promoted.
Well, no, we were losing it.
Yeah.
And that's why Napeebury Ellen was set up to, I suppose, again, protect the demise of the whole Ilium pipes. And also, that's why Coltus was set up in 1952, because the tradition was dying and we were being invaded by subcultures from America and the UK. For example, the president, I remember at the time, Childers, said that we were in danger of being overcome with American subcultures. And that's what it really came from at that time, that desire to protect our tradition, and especially in music, dance, song and dance. But in North Kerry, I suppose they had Jerry Munro, as they referred to, Jerry Munnox, to refer to. And he was the individual that inspired Father Pat Ahern and Liam Tarrant as well. Father Paddy Heron met him when he was only 7 years old, and he was inspired by him, and he has outlined that, you know, in the book on a number of occasions. And Liam Tarrant, for example, again, was inspired by him. And Jerry Mullineau was in an unmarked grave in Gale Cemetery, and Liam Tarrant went all over North Kerry organising concerts in order to make money to put a memorial over him. And then, I suppose, that was one of the reasons why he knew, well, he was from North Kerry. Liam Tarrant was from Nisselton, so he was right in the heart of that whole tradition as well. But by going around North Kerry, I would say he felt that there was a need to protect what we had up there, and hence the reason for the Taoiseach Sinn Féinniúg to be the centre of that dynamic, and it succeeded.
Yeah, excellent. And we are going to give you an example of that wonderful culture that has been preserved, and it's no better demonstrated than the wonderful musicians we have in studio. We're going to hear a piece from them now, as we will throughout the programme. We have Greta Curtin, who's on concertina. Jesse Healy is on the fiddle. Alana Kazan is also on the fiddle. And Princeas O'Cossig on the tin whistle. So what are we going to hear first?
Yeah, I suppose we'll play a tune called The Blackbird.
And this will take us to the break, and we'll join you again after that.
Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. A very special programme events to mark the 15th anniversary of the opening of Taoiseamh on July 7th, 1974 in Féinniúig is taking place this weekend. And my guests in studio, we have Jimmy Deanahan, who's one of the organisers, as well as Susan Motherway, who's also one of the organisers and a director of music for it as well. And speaking of music, Susan, you have brought along a collection from 1976, is it?
Yes, it is, yes.
Yeah.
So the first piece that we've chosen is a choral piece, given that Séamusa, I suppose, developed from St. John's Church Choir. So that's why we've chosen this. And Father Pat did the arrangement of this piece himself, and it was actually recorded with the choir in Taoiseamusa, Féinniúig, in 1976, in preparation for their tour to the States. They wanted to have something to bring with them, some merchandise to bring with them. And when it was released in Ireland, it actually went to the top of the charts for 2 weeks, and the group ended up in the front of the RTE guide. So that's why we have chosen our first piece.
What an amazing story. Have a listen to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful piece of music there, and the context to it is absolutely amazing, described so well by Susan Motherway there. Jimmy, we were talking off air there about, I suppose, the significance of Kieran O'Donnell there, TD Minister of State of the, for the Office of Public Works. He's unveiling the plaque to recognise these visionary men.
Absolutely, and it's a coincidence because Tom O'Donnell was Minister for the Gaeltacht back from 73 to 77, and he both turned the sod on Tuxim Sin Phnug, and also he again opened the door when they were opening it in 1974. So he played a leading role in that, so it's a coincidence that he's Kieran's uncle. And also Tom was very well received by the people of Phnug at that particular time, and when I met him afterwards, he always remarked on how friendly the people of Phnug and welcoming the people of Phnug were towards him at that particular time. And he could even mention some of the names of the people he met there at that particular time. So that's significant that Kieran would come down and do it, and the reason being he's a very busy minister, obviously, in the Office of Public Works. It's because of that connection with the past and with his Uncle Tom, who was a very highly regarded individual by all political parties and by people of all political persuasions.
Yeah, it's amazing. I always find in these stories, you know, the kind of coincidences and happenstances, you'd wonder was a fate, you know, all these different things, the way they align, because that's what came across in my interview with Father Pat Ahern. Can we speak about Father Pat Ahern, Jimmy? What a dynamic man he is, and, you know, a visionary. Unbelievable. And talent, like Susan described there, you know, organising the music, what he even did with the choir, that would be enough. But what he went on to do.
Well, he's a genius, obviously. And he has an understanding of Irish rural life more than anybody. And he has, again, translated that tradition through Shimsa. And he has, as I said, transmitted it on stage through mime, dance, song and music. But there are very few, I suppose. He has lived to be very old in one sense, and very luckily, and he's still with us. But he goes right back to the 30s. There are very few around that can go back that distance. And then his house was a big rambling house as well. And they had a number of great musicians around that locality. But then he had that connection with Jerry Munlow. And it was Jerry Munlow that really inspired him. And also a circus that came to town as well in my van that helped him. And his mother actually was a very good musician, and of course his father was very much involved in the War of Independence, and also became chairperson of Kerry County Council afterwards, a very distinguished politician in North Kerry for a number of years. And his brother Sean was a remarkable singer. So I think he really got it, and he got the opportunity through Shimsa to express it. And we're just very fortunate that we had Father Ahern, and we still have him in Kerry and in Ireland. And just another point as well, Bill Whelan, some years ago I was doing a DVD on Jimmy Hickey, another great dancer who was inspired by Munlow steps and his hornpipe and so on. And I interviewed Bill Whelan for it, and Bill said that they went back to Shimsa Tíre to be inspired for their project in Seville, in Expo 92 in Seville. And it was that connection with Shimsa Tíre and the flamingo dancer at that particular time that came and danced with Shimsa that led to Riverdance. So Bill Whelan says that quite clearly. So you can say that Father Pat was part of the inspiration for Riverdance, and also because Michael Flatley was part of Riverdance, that he inspired Lord of the Dance as well. And Shimsa was there before Lord of the Dance, Riverdance, and now several other interpretation of Irish dance and tradition on stage since then.
Yeah, they were bringing it to the world. Yeah.
And they took it out to the whole world then, to Australia, to the USA, to the UK and parts of Europe. And they won an award, a very early folk award, actually European Folk Award in 1974, for Shimsa and what their vision was about tradition and translating and transmitting that tradition. So they, in time, history, I think, will be very kind to Father Pat Hearn and Seamsa and what they have achieved to date and what they will achieve in the future, no doubt. And we would hope, of course, that Finug would be very much part of that dynamic for the future now. And that's what we hope to build on. True Finug.
Yeah, we do have to go for a break. I'm looking forward to hearing what's going to be involved in the programme of events after that.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, this morning on the programme, we're talking about a very special programme of events to mark the 50th anniversary of the opening of Tá Siamsa on July 7th, 1974 in Finug, which will take place this weekend, starting this evening. I'm delighted to say in studio, I'm joined by former Minister Jimmy Deanahan, and also, he's one of the organisers, and also another organiser with us is Susan Motherway, and Susan is the musical director for this programme of events. So, Susan, what have you got going on?
Okay, so we have 2 days of events happening out in Tá Siamsa and also in the pub across the road in McCarthy's Bar. So they're helping us out with a bit more space. So I suppose for the events, we're looking back at the past, and so we're going to be showing some of that memorabilia that Jimmy has mentioned, some of the old footage. We have some of the photos, props and things all available, but we're also getting some of the older original members to take part, apart from Pat O'Hearn himself. We've had some input from Christopher Fitzsimons, the first company secretary, when he was working with Bord Fault and really helped get things going. And as we've been talking quite a lot about the fact that Siamsa emerged from a choir, which was St John's, and St John's Choir are also going to be with us over the weekend. So we also have friends of Siamsa. We've had Catherine Foley, who did a lot of work in collecting the dance of North Kerry, and she has created an archive collection of it out in Muckross. And so she's coming down to talk about her experiences of doing field work with the people and the local stories. And Bill Whelan has also, as Jimmy has mentioned, has contributed to telling us his story about how Siamsa helped develop the Seville Suite and how that led and was incorporated into Riverdance. Also, as Jimmy has also mentioned, we have some families, so apart from the Tarrants, that we have the Wilmots travelling all the way from the USA, and they seemingly have a good fine band of musicians with them in the Boyles. Whoa. And they're going to be playing as well for us over the weekend. So as I said, we just don't really want to kind of indulge in the past all the time. You know, Siamsa is going through change right now, but I can tell you, and you can hear from the energy of the musicians inside in this room, that there is a young group of people who want to get out there and they want to perform and they want to drive this forward. I must give commendation to Greta. They're driving that band forward. She has been brilliant in helping me over the weekend. But they are actually devising, you know, musical performances over the weekend. There's a number of people. Maura Walsh has a band of North Kerry musicians. I have a fantastic fellow by the name of Jamie Flannery out there in Dingle who's coordinating dancers for me. You know, and I have contributions across the board, all giving of their time free of charge and organising things. And so there's a series of these performances. Some are kind of formal. We have Jonathan Kelleher performing with Jimmy Hickey. And then we have some very informal events where we'd like the public and the locals to join in with us. So on Saturday night, once we finish the concert, we're heading across to McCarthy's Bar.
And
we would like everyone to join us there. And on tomorrow afternoon, around 4:30, we want to, suppose, to finish off with a kind of a Rambling House event where the community cast will decide what they want to sing, dance and play, and of course any locals who would want to join us there, they can. I think what's really important for this event over the weekend is to recognise the community, which was the Finuic community, and how much they gave to the starting of Tá Siamsa when it was beginning, and we want to re-engage them with us as we try and revamp and push things forward. So on the tomorrow morning, they're going to be preparing a breakfast for us. So we're not quite sure if we're not out in the lawn in Finuig, if the weather's dry, we'll be over in McCarthy's trying to get some cover. So watch out for us, and all the food is free. So if you're still in the pub overnight, you'll be fine for breakfast. But we would like to really thank them as well for the amount of work they've put in preparing for this weekend, you know, cutting the grass, helping with the painting, clearing, putting out everything for us. I am musical director, but I'm one of many, to be quite honest. I have a number of troubleshooters, so if I could just say a quick thank you to them. Jimmy, of course, who has pushed us to do this, but Mike Shea, Pat O'Hearn, Jonathan, Greta, Michelle Murphy down there in Sheemsa, and Aaron Connolly.
Mm. What are you trying to achieve when you are a musical director for such an event?
I think what we're trying to do is recognise the people and their contribution to the past. I suppose we have a panel of the original members, and they're going to talk about what it was like to be there at the very start. And I think in doing that, we will remind ourselves what the first mission for Talk Sheemsa was. It was to encourage people to get engaged in the traditional arts. It was to try and mine the local traditions, dancing and so on, and see that we could develop it into something of a greater, and I wouldn't say greater artistic, but, you know, of a contemporary artistic flavour. And then we also wanted to ensure that it was a place where the locals could come in and socialise and share. We're all about sustainability and, you know, SDGs and all of this, and bringing in the, you know, making sure that people in the countryside aren't getting lonely. And we have a wonderful place where people could come and share and have their rambling house events and so on. And we wanted to, I suppose, reignite that desire, that want, and to have that cultural centre used again.
Excellent. Jimmy, can you describe the physical structure and the importance of that building? Because people mightn't have visited it, you know.
Yeah, well, Father Hearn modelled it on the old farmhouse. And also, there are flagstones in there that he got from various people that they took from their own houses, their old houses. There were, I suppose, they had moved from those houses into new houses back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and they gave the hearthstone to it. So they're there, and actually there's a little sketch of where all the stones came from up in the fireplace. So it's quite unique for a set, and you don't see a set like that in too many places now. So we would hope to kind of reconnect the type of pastimes going on around North Kerry that are, you know, rapidly going from the memory of people, and maybe have something similar that they have in Muckross Farm as regards baking bread and other aspects of rural life. Also, we want to make it an Irish language centre, and I've been speaking to a number of people regarding this, and there's a fair revival of the Irish language going on in North Kerry at the moment, and real genuine interest in it. Like Billy Keane, for example, has Irish language sessions in his bar in St. John's in the Stole. There are a number of Irish lessons going on, and the same in the Writer Centre. So there's a genuine interest now in the Irish language, and we want to make it a centre for the traditional arts, as pointed out by Susan, but also for the Irish language as well. And I think that that's achievable in a major way. And some of the young people in Finnoog, like three of the Cronin sisters now, they're all probably going to be primary teachers, and they're all big into the Irish language. And I'd just like to thank the Cronins and the Horrigan family for helping with the breakfast. Now, everyone is welcome for that breakfast. It's going to set the scene for the Sunday. But there's a great, I find, with young people at the moment, with some young people, not everybody, there's a very genuine interest in the Irish language, and we hope to be very much to the core of that in Finnoog in the future.
Very good. Well, if you tune into the Saturday Supplement 2 once a month, you'll find out how I'm doing on my journey to become fluent in a year, this time next year. So I'll have to go up to North Kerry and pay a visit there to brush up on the Gaeilge. Susan, we've another piece of music here. This is Liam Heaslip. Anything to say about this piece?
Well, I suppose Liam Heaslip is one of the main tenors in Sheemsa, probably one of the two that we're mentioning today. And he's probably well known for singing the Rose of Tralee on the big nights in Tralee for years. And he's his son is actually joining us over the weekend, which is Pierce. And his grandson, David, is also going to be dancing. And I suppose this is the fact is that Sheemsa really is full of families, you know, who've passed down the tradition one to the other, and they've stayed with it. And so what we really want to commemorate here today, Liam Heaslip, and so we've chosen On Crown Uil for that. And I think there's also some music at the end of it with some of the other stalwarts, Nicky and Anne McAuliffe and Mike Shea.
Excellent. We'll have a listen to that now. ¶¶
is no gal gir an mid an pala. La hagla con noi getit im in rolles. Snur a bogig, mis a bogig, tis a bog an mid le keil as a grieving, eving all in
That was A Feast for the Ears. Susan's great idea to bring that music in, because I think it really connects us with it, and just to hear the recordings of it as well, they're so authentic as well, which is absolutely beautiful, so thanks a million for that. Jimmy, the legacy of Tak Siimsa, what do you think it is in the 50 years? A big question.
It is a big question, but when you look at Siimsa and what it has achieved in that 50 years, it's extraordinary. And I would say not totally, I suppose, understood. And the connection it has made all over the world with the Irish traditional arts in various forms. And also it has spawned and influenced the likes of Riverdance and Lord of the Dance and other shows, again, that are based on the Irish traditional arts, especially step dancing. So it has that left that legacy, but also it has educated so many people over that period of time, people like Susan here, who had the experience of playing in the National Concert Hall, and so many more that are not only national figures but global figures as well. The likes of Aidan O'Carroll, like Aidan has, I suppose, produced so many talented people, musicians that are now like Ken Rice, that are now resonating all over the country and the world. And but for Tak Siimsa and Fionnuala as a training centre, that may not have happened. So it has left a huge legacy. And our ambition now, hopefully, that will continue for the next 50 years.
You mentioned as well, I suppose, you know, the place it is, we mentioned earlier, in the book, Forging the Dance by Father Pat Ahern, he talks about the Forge being like a community centre, and that's where people gathered, and in that influenced his work later on, and that this is the place where people gather as well as it being the training facility, I think was so important. We are going to hear some more wonderful music from our musical guests. We have Greta Curtin, who's on concertina, Jesse Healy on the fiddle, and Annika San is also on the fiddle, and Princius O'Cossig. So, Greta, what are we going to have next?
We're going to play a set of reels next, The Silver Sphere and Swinging on the Gate.
Excellent, in your own time.
2, 3, 4.
Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, so this morning, we are talking about a special programme of events to mark the 50th anniversary of the opening of Tak Siomsa on July 7th, 1974 in Fionnuala, which will take place this weekend. I can't believe where the time has gone. We've had some absolute amazing music on the programme this morning, some from the past, some from the present, and I suppose it tells us about the future as well. Susan, just remind people again about the when it's all kicking off today, and also where can people go for more information?
Yeah, so tonight event. The tickets have to be reserved through Eventbrite, so we'll ask people to take a look at that to see how many are available before they come along. Tomorrow we're a little bit freer, so if you want to get more information on that, you can go to Siomsa Tíre's Facebook page, and we have shared some of the details of the programme there for them.
Brilliant. I mentioned the future. Jimmy, what are your hopes for the future in a nutshell?
Well, it'll become a major education centre for music, song and dance, and for the Irish language, and there'll be a focus on young people. They are the future, they have the energy, so we'll be focused on them to continue that great tradition that's in North Kerry. So there'll be a big focus on the traditional arts of North Kerry and also the Irish language.
And just finally, I suppose, like we always talk about the thread in Gaelic football, the way it's handed down, that, you know, you were only custodians of the jersey was handed to you. You know, when you played with Kerry, you were walking the shoulders of giants before you. It's very much come across in what you've been saying here this morning as well. You know, like the way you say Bill Whelan was kind of, you can trace it back. It's the same with the training, but it's built on maybe great Sleeve Lucre musicians that were there before and great North Kerry musicians that were there before, and it's been handed on and handed on. So that training is actually vital, isn't it?
It's very important, but the encouraging aspect of it, when you go to Coulter's, be it the Kerry Fla, the Munster Fla, or the All-Ireland Fla, you see all these young people not only playing the competitions, but also, you know, as well on the streets. And young people really love their tradition. And look, it's cool now to play Irish music. One time it wasn't seen to that extent. So there's a great love being, I suppose, fostered and generated for Irish music amongst young people. And that's because of what Seamus has done through training programs, what Coulter's has done as well. So I think we're in a very good place in Finnoog for offering that, those kind of programs for the future. And they're doing them in several other centres as well. But we want to be very kind of focused on the traditional arts and the Irish language. So that's the way I see it going in the future.
Excellent. Well, the programme events, like I said, it will include a dress by the man who conceived and founded it, Father Pat O'Hearn, as well as the unveiling of a plaque to recognise the vision of Father Pat, Liam Tarrant and Martin Whelan and Seamus Wilmot by Kieran O'Donnell, TD, and Minister of State for the Office of Public Works. We wish you all the best to look with it this weekend and enjoy it. And hello, Father Pat. I know you'll be listening as well. A real hospitable man as well. I spent a great few hours in his company at his home just outside Tralee. So I want to wish him best luck. It's well deserved as well as those the rest of those people involved. And Susan, we are going to get another piece of music that you mentioned, these wonderful recordings that you've brought with us. And who are we going to play out with this morning?
So we've chosen a love song, Broken Na Carrigabona, which has been sung by Sean O'Hearn, who's Pat's brother and a beautiful tenor. And Sean can't be with us over the weekend, so we hope that he's listening into us this morning, and we're sending him our love to him. And he's also joined on this recording by a lady by the name of Mary Deedy. I have never met Mary Deedy, but what an amazing singer. You'll hear her now. And she's based in the States, and although she also wanted to come home for the event, she can't make it. So if she's listening online, we're also sending our love to her.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Susan Motherway, Jimmy Deanahan, Greta Corton, Jesse Healy, Alana Kassan, and Princess Okazic, who were our musicians. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. I'll be back again next Saturday from 9 a.m. on the Saturday Supplement. Until then, look after yourself and take care. And we're going to hear now the wonderful voice of Sean O'Hearn.
Oh, is he chosen, gan vreg gan daud, tan an kiu in tashvall, gar gil e kam na rondaun. Begged the whole.